Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to the March 26th edition of the PFF Forecast. It is Win Totals Part 1. We're going to talk about win totals that have just been released. We see them up on DraftKings. There are a few others smattered around, but largely we're going to talk about the all 32 win totals that are up on DraftKings. We've got Judah Fortgang in the house today. We'll have Arjun on Wednesday to tackle these. Once again, it'll be a great show. Let's rock. All right, fellas. We've got no love for draft season. No one has the balls to put out any draft props. But thankfully, we have some win totals. They're up on DraftKings and DraftKings Sportsbook, which, if you're lucky like Brad, I've heard that you can get some really special treatment from DraftKings if you bet win totals there.
DraftKings let me drop a big $53. I think they confused me with Judah and my login. But thank you to DK for letting me, you know, bet. You can hold $50 in mine for the next, you know, 10, 11 months. Congrats to DK.
Judah, what's the worst you've been limited? I mean, because you hit your big same game parlay win. Was that on DraftKings? Yeah.
Hi, it was on FanDuel. I hit a different same game parlay that same night on DraftKings. I got limited to $1.19 trying to bet. an alt line the next week. It went up to like 218 the week after.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm excited for week one this year.
High roller.
Oh man. Okay, let's start here. So I think the interesting thing is, you know, and by the way, everyone that is joining and listening to us here today, if you're not a part of the Printing Press Discord, you should go get involved there, because markets like this, they move a little bit over the course of the offseason. We're not always going to be able to talk about when news happens, whether there's a play or not. And so that's the best place to drop into the Discord, whether it be draft props as soon as they get, you know, released. It's a great place. And win totals to a slightly lesser extent. And it's a good place for discussion as well. But for people that are listening either to this or maybe it's their first time listening, figuring out how to bet win totals can be interesting, because it's not like, you know, a bet on a Sunday where you might put together a few player props and the very next week you can kind of re-rack, right? These do not get closed out until, you know, at the earliest, like, you know, a few weeks before the season ends. You know, some like the Seahawks last week, I think that cashed like week 9, the over, their win totals at 5.5. So it is an interesting proposition how to attack win totals, because most people I would assume out there have a finite bankroll. And so tying it all up in things that won't cash until the end of the season can be a little tricky. Brad, let's start with you. How do you approach win totals?
Yeah. So first I started a high level before even diving into roster for the changes from the years past. And I look at things we've already discussed in the chat, like one score win loss, Pythagorean win totals in 2022. There's a great thing I've actually been looking for, I can't find, but someone posted essentially how many snaps a team plays with 80% or more win probability in the second half, which they found actually correlates even better than like a one score win loss. Kind of just shows, you know, the quality of team they are. I'm not trying to not shove that person out. I forget who posted. I can't find it, but when I do, I'll look into it. So first, all those high level things. I then, and Sam Hoppen posted this on Twitter, we'll look at the market implied strength of schedule. I do not factor this in a ton because, as we know, every single year we come in saying some team's going to have the hardest schedule, something the easiest, and then injuries happen, and some teams are just bad that we thought were going to be good. Sometimes the market's not perfect, like dumb people betting up the Raiders last year and stuff like that. So you can't just look at that, but I'll look at that. And then lastly, for me, I look at two, you know, roster construction approaches. The first is WAR, wins above replacement at PFF. We obviously don't think it's a, you take a player from one team and plop them on another. You can't just transfer that amount of WAR he generated one year to another team. But what I will do is look at unit level production and unit level performance in our wins above replacement metric, and map it to a new team and adjust it, kind of nothing like super advanced, but more just, do I think this addresses a glaring need based on our numbers? You know, do I think this is maybe adds depth so injuries or stuff like that will impact the team less? And then last but not least, I look at top 100 draft capital. Of course, there's going to be undrafted free agent gems. There's going to be the Tariq Woolens of the world every year. But I just look at top 100 draft capital, and then look at the probability of rookie snaps on a given team, either based on recent year trends, again, based on kind of like where the deficiencies are on the roster. You know, for example, like I like Seattle for all the reasons I just said. I also love Seattle that has, you know, two top 20 draft picks and a couple more picks in the top 100 as well. They got to land at least one player. You know, you'd imagine that makes some sort of impact. I guess I shouldn't say that because they went a bunch of years landing no one in the top 100 for a long time. But nevertheless, like that's all I do to bake into this equation.
Yeah. You're suggesting that, you know, a third round running back or second round running back isn't, you know, a value to the Seahawks.
Hey, Kenneth Walker, almost runner-up rookie of the year, man.
What could they do with Bijan and Kenneth in the back in the backfield?
Pete Carroll's dreaming of this every day.
Judah, what about you?
Yeah, so I think similar to Brad, starting with fundamentals, and I'm sure it also surprises no one that I often bet the alt unders or overs. I think it's actually like especially for win totals, which is that like there's a ton of volatility. If you're going to be wrong about a certain team, you might be very wrong. For instance, like the Bucks last year, the Rams last year, which is like you can really hammer kind of one thesis and like the trickle down effects of that, and you can capitalize a lot more, and there's just a lot of volatility. That's kind of the name of the game. So similar to Brad, start with, you know, different fundamental statistics, whether it's you know, as you're saying, playing with leads, different ways of kind of capturing play to see if there's some sort of edge relative to market expectation. I fully fade any narratives on strength of schedule or even like division play, because I'm going to work under the assumption that while the markets are probably better than any one individual, they're probably going to be wrong. And the one thing we know is that the teams that are projected to be really good at the start of the season probably won't look that way towards the end, which is to say there's going to be a bunch of teams, right? Like the Seahawks last year, we all just assumed they're going to be the worst team in the league, and like the NFC West or even the Rams. And we're like, oh, we've got some mispriced Niners teams because we're projecting a certain strength of schedule that just like wasn't actually there. I'm fading all of that. I'm trying to look at individual teams, seeing how good they are, and kind of basing it off that. The other thing is, especially at this time, is the timing is crucial, which is I think certain teams are going to signal kind of how aggressive they will be in free agency, how much they're looking to improve their team now, as opposed to kind of playing for the future. And I don't think that's really going to be priced into markets now. For instance, like the Chargers last year, a great example of a team that started out very aggressive and is going to continue being very aggressive. So I think we can kind of use that to our advantage, betting win totals now, which is like we can have a conversation about whether it's, you know, good football strategy to make to trade up or do any of that sort of thing. But the reality is that's often going to be something that improves your team in year one. And that's something we can capitalize on.
And then how much of your bankroll would you say each of you that ends up by the time the season starts or by the time the season's over you allocate to win totals?
I usually have one big bet that I do each year because like I really don't want to tie up a lot of money in it, and I'm not going to spread it out and have a bunch of different things, you know, like, and like Judah said as well, I mean there's just so much volatility here, but I will usually pick one team that I, you know, have a very strong feeling about that year. And we'll put a decent amount on it. You know, I think to a degree, I get the whole argument of you're tying that money up, but if you have a strong position on a certain club, you know, you, I guess you could just bet them each week. And maybe, you know, if it's a team that's not that high in the win total, you get some positive, you know, plus money, money lines and all those things. But anyway, long answer short, usually one is big and the rest are maybe just kind of smaller, you know, throwaway bets.
Yeah. I think it kind of depends on the conviction, as you're saying. I think 2 years ago, I had a lot more. It probably ended up as like 4 or 5% of my total bankroll. Last year was probably like 1 to 2, which also just like the name of the game is that like, I might like, you know, 10 to 15 futures bets, but I'm playing that on a weekly basis. Mm-hmm. It's kind of overshadowed by what's happening week to week. But the other thing about win totals, as you were saying to start, which is that like you can take the other side very easily. That market is mm-hmm. always available. So it's not as if you're really holding your money the entire time. Mm-hmm. You can look at it as a position you can constantly trade from, which is why I'm more willing to bet kind of totals off the bat.
Yeah, it's a really, really good point, right? Which is you have opportunities to, for example, like I referenced the Seahawks. If you had the Seahawks last year, you cash out, you know, pretty early, but you can also have one where, you know, you kind of understand the position that you're in and you can trade off of that throughout the course of the season. Brad, you mentioned Pythagorean wins. Just for anyone out there that does not know what this is a Bill James metric, originally comes from baseball. And we talked a lot about like one score wins, percentage of games with an 80%+ win probability. Those things are all trying to measure essentially what Pythagorean wins are as well, which is, you know, kind of how dominant were you? So Pythagorean wins is taking points for raised to a particular exponent. I'll get to that in a second, divided by points for plus points against. And the exponent is 2.37. And then you multiply that by 17, and that gives you what is called your Pythagorean win. So that's basically a better predictor of how good you were, and that correlates better, predicts better how many wins you will have the following season. And a good example of this is, say, the Minnesota Vikings, who won 13 games last year, but their Pythagorean win total was just over 8 wins. You know, and one way to think about that is their score differential, point differential over the course of the year, I think was either right at 0 or was like slightly negative. And that, you know, obviously correlates to not being super dominant throughout the year, despite having that many wins. So that's kind of what a lot of those metrics are getting at. I, like you, Judah, fade as much as I can the strength of schedule stuff out there, just because it's like, first off, if you use what the Vegas win totals imply, then you're just not going to have an edge over the market. Like, they are already implying those percentages. And then secondarily, to your point, like, we just don't know. So much randomness in terms of what is going to happen in the league. I'm similar to you guys in that it really varies how much I put on win totals, but it's rarely ever more than 5% of what I wager in a season. Okay, let's get into it here. So we're going to go division by division, just to give everyone kind of a sense here. So the highest win totals, there are 3 teams with an 11.5 win total. Those are the Niners, Bengals, and Chiefs. There are 2 teams with a 5.5 win total. No 4.5s this year. League's getting stronger. Brad's Bears no longer there to give us a 4.5. The Texans and the Cardinals, 5.5. Bucks at 6.5, interestingly. Colts at 6.5 as well. Let's start on the AFC, and let's go with the AFC West. So the Kansas City Chiefs, as I mentioned, at 11.5. The Chargers at 9.5. The Denver Broncos at 8.5. And the Las Vegas Jimmy G's at 7.5. Start with you, Brad. Is there anything there that you find particularly interesting?
Yeah, you know, the Chiefs actually outperformed their Pythagorean win total last year. It was just above 11. They obviously won 14 games. So there are some, I guess, potential signals for regression. I do think the Denver Broncos are not going to be as much of a doormat this year. They're on the flip side. I think they were 4-9 in one score games last year. They obviously, you know, the defense was a huge part of that. And we know the year-to-year volatility that comes with, you know, an elite defense. But the Chiefs still at this point, to me, I know the AFC is a gauntlet. I understand, you know, there's risk here in betting on, you know, the top of the market on an over. But I mean, they really last year in a lot of ways, like intentionally took a step back and were willing to kind of clear their books, do things differently from a spending standpoint, you know, not restructure Patrick Mahomes' contract to clear more room to add more talent. And I think they got a lot better in this free agency cycle, adding Charles Omenihu, you know, getting rid of some dead weight like a Frank Clark that enables them to maybe make more moves. I think Juwan Taylor is, look, the league thinks he's an elite pass protector. Obviously, our data isn't quite there yet. We've seen guys make that, you know, fourth and fifth year leap at tackle all the time. And for whatever reason, the league seems to think he's that guy. But they still can add talent at wide receiver. I think they are in the mix for Odell Beckham Jr. on a one-year flyer. Not that he's a massive difference-making player, but I just think you talk about, you know, Judah trying to like find aggression, or like you said, we're not looking at, you know, long-term cap health and roster construction to, you know, still whatever. They can still, if they want to, be quite aggressive and make some moves, make a trade maybe. Are they in the DeAndre Hopkins market as well? Yada yada yada. I just still think there is somehow, you know, value on an over 11.5 with the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah, no, I agree with Brad. I mean, all you need to say was just Kadarius Toney. You know, a healthy Kadarius Toney is all you need. over. I love the Broncos under here. I think kind of the, as you alluded to, the defensive regression, I think, will meet kind of any production in the offense. Russell Wilson was terrible last year, right? They're changing coordinators again. I don't think what's going to magically change with Russell Wilson that he's going to turn back the clock. We have seen the signs of decline even before coming to the Broncos. I'd be very surprised if he's better. Not to mention, right, Jerry Jeudy might be moved. We don't even know who's going to be playing receiver. 8.5 is a very high total for a team that was awful last year. They're maybe the worst offense in the league. I don't really see how that's changing. Yes, I don't really care about, you know, strength of schedule. The Chiefs are going to be good next year. The Chargers are going to be good next year. I just don't see how the Broncos like take a huge step forward unless Russell Wilson just magically turns back the clock 4 years.
That's a very interesting one. And I like where your head is at. And you mentioned alt win totals, and those are not up yet, but the Broncos are one that could be interesting there. Rumors are here that they're going to trade Jerry Jeudy. We talked about this a little bit last week. You know, there's still a lot of flux there, and all of the change. That's a really interesting one. I agree with you, Brad, as square as it is on the Kansas City Chiefs. The Chargers at 9.5, I think this is one that I'm not going to touch, but I'm a little curious on your guys' take on the Raiders. The Raiders last year had 6 wins and 9 one-score losses. They get an upgrade at quarterback. They still have a lot of talent at wide receiver. And it kind of plays on the narrative of the Broncos are going to regress, the Chargers are the Chargers. The Raiders are a team that, you know, I think is actually improving at the quarterback position. So I'm inclined to like the Raiders over. What do you guys think about that?
Yeah, so they're a team that, you know, could have some one-score regression. And again, all one-score games are not created the same or not the same. They had some ridiculous, back-breaking, debilitating losses. Now, you know, is Josh McDaniels going to not blow a bunch of 17-point leads? I would hope not for the Raiders' sake, but I guess we never know. For me there, these are ones where, and I know this, you know, sounds silly to put it on one draft pick that could be nothing, but like if they take a Levis at 7 versus a Jalen Carter falls to 7, like that does like kind of change – you know, at least just like the utility of that potential top 10 pick. You know, obviously maybe the market moves after that, but I don't hate the idea. I don't hate the thought process there. You know, I'm not saying I'm joining you or anything like that, but I think they've had a fine offseason.
Yeah, I think this is priced basically just right. I'm not so sold that Jimmy G is necessarily an upgrade over Derek Carr. I think it's, you know, maybe a wash. I saw you try and sneak that getaway with that.
Yeah.
But
I'm seeing if either of you would catch me. No, I think those are, I tend to agree with you. I think those are kind of spot on, but I wanted to mention it because it was one we had not, Chargers and Raiders did not mention. I think I'm none of these are like my favorite of the group, I would say overall. Let's go AFC North now. Cincinnati Bengals also have an 11.5 win total. The Cleveland Browns are at 9.5, and then Pittsburgh Steelers and the Baltimore Ravens are each at 8.5. So a division that, as we've talked about, is a very strong division. Vegas certainly agrees with that. Brad, we'll start with you.
Yeah, this was the first of two that I wanted to highlight where I found it interesting. The Browns may have surpassed the Ravens now, but for the divisional odds, I believe the Browns were third when the divisional odds came out behind the Baltimore Ravens. And now, of course, have a 9.5 win total versus the Ravens. It is 8.5 with the over skewed to -150. But nevertheless, you know, a full game or whatever, I guess, you know, 3/4 of a game, whatever, when you work in the odds there. So I found that particularly interesting. I don't really have a lean on any of these. I'm afraid of this division from an over-under standpoint. You know, everyone obviously is going to mention Mike Tomlin and never have a losing season, and they do have a ton of young players, maybe could get better, but it's just a division I think is going to beat each other up this year. And my, you know, play was on the Browns, that divisional, you know, what was it? We had +330, I think we got it, or something in that range. I'm staying off of the win totals here.
I don't hate the Ravens here. I'm curious how you guys think they're pricing in kind of Lamar Jackson in this.
So last year they had a win total of 9, or 9.5, I believe, yeah. Right? Yeah. So
and they won 10.
We'll say they got up to 10?
Yeah, no, they got up to 10. They won 10 games. I think
they won 10. Sorry. Yeah, with Tyler Huntley playing, what, 5 or 6 of those. So, yeah, that to me suggests that they're at least like hedging against him not being there, or in their minds, he's not fully effective or not fully engaged.
It closed,
or something like that.
Sorry to interrupt you. It closed 10.5.
Oh, really? Okay. I was on that at 9.5. That's just my favorite win totals. But yeah, that to me, that 100% then is them pricing in. Like, we don't think Lamar is going to be full Lamar for 17 games next year.
Right. I want to take the other side of that. Especially if the alt market is available there, because there's real upside if Lamar does play and if he is healthy. I just like, this is a team that even with Tyler Huntley the past couple of years has found ways to, you know, be above 500. It's almost the Steelers effect there. And as you mentioned, a younger team. And like, if we get Lamar Jackson, which is a real possibility, and especially given the past couple of weeks, 8.5 seems way too low to me.
There was a report, I can't remember who said this, but basically that other, I think it was Benjamin Albright wrote a piece, I can't remember where, and he quoted an NFL, I think it was, he said decision maker, that the belief is that any deal that is offered to Lamar, the Ravens are going to match. So like, what's even the point? And is that something, Brad, that you think is generally on point? Like, is that one way to think about it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's so hard to tell at this point what's going on there, but clearly the relationship is fractured to a degree, and it's not in a positive direction. But I think, like Judah's saying, I mean, just fade narratives and just fade all of that, and this would be a great alt, you know, play, because you're not laying the massive juice of the -150 here.
Yeah, and I like the alt there, right? Because if Lamar plays, then it should probably be 10.5. And if he doesn't play, it should be way lower. So why would you take this number? Just see if you can, you know, find an alt line there. I would ask Judah, where would you go to find an alt? I can't find any on.
There's nothing available right now. Yeah. Last year, at least, DraftKings had one game out of the direction. FanDuel had, you know, 3 to 4. Hopefully those open up soon, but nothing's available right now.
What do you think the Ravens do? So let's say that Lamar gets a deal somewhere else and they don't match it. Like, who's their quarterback next year?
The thing too is they gave Tyler Huntley the lowest round tender, which I found very fascinating as well. I mean, maybe they just think no other team, you know, wants to utilize his skill set, so we're not afraid of someone signing him to another offer sheet. But very strange for a Pro Bowler to not even get the second round tender. I'm obviously being facetious there, but I don't know. I mean, what is your back? Who's available, right? Like, you're not gonna turn around and trade those picks for you know, someone else. Like, I have no answer for you there.
Yeah, that's weird. Like, I've got a weird one for you. Trey Lance.
Yeah, I love that. Yes. He's the dark horse for like a bunch of teams, Minnesota, them, that I kind of in my mind would just love to see what they can do there.
Yeah. Like, if they lose, if let's say that the Dolphins or someone goes out and gives Lamar some sort of crazy deal, they don't match, they could turn around and trade for Trey Lance. And Trey Lance would be an interesting, you know, plug into a system like that. So let me just say this about Lamar. So I don't think we've talked since the Ken Francis thing came out. The funniest part of this whole thing has nothing to do with Ken Francis, you know, supposedly being some friend of Lamar Jackson's, business partner of Lamar Jackson's, who's calling teams. The funniest thing is the business venture that they have together. Did you guys see this?
Oh yeah, the gym that you can bring anywhere.
Yeah, what's it called? It's called like the Entire Gym or something.
The Entire Gym. Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
Okay, so it's the Entire Gym, and Lamar Jackson does a commercial for it where he basically rolls this thing out. It looks like a suitcase, looks like an away bag, but it's the jankiest looking thing because it has like a kind of smallish tablet. It almost looks like a just knockoff iPad that's just sticking out of the top of it. It's like stuck onto the top of it. So you couldn't like, this thing would break off the second you put it in a trunk or something like that. But Lamar Jackson rolls it out to a practice field and is doing like sit-ups with a dumbbell. It's honestly like watching that was one of, it made me want to really, really take into question like I think Lamar needs some people in his life that are helping him make some better decisions because that is not a good look. But Lamar Jackson on the football field, I will bet on. And I think for that reason, especially because he doesn't have representation, Brad, like, I just don't think he's going to get, he's going to get a deal with another team. So that was the one that stuck out to me as well. Okay, let's go to the NFC West. The Niners are the third team in the NFL with an 11.5 win total. And this is an interesting division. The Seahawks have the second highest win total, 8.5. The LA Rams at 7.5. And then the Arizona Cardinals at 5.5. Brad, we'll start with you.
Yep. So I already mentioned Seattle, put it on Twitter right away. I get there is the potential you're kind of falling for Geno Smith and you're not taking into him, maybe falling back a little bit. But I just think this is a team that, another thing that Judah mentioned where, it's not necessarily a good thing to be huge spenders in free agency for your long-term health, but the big spenders in free agency are going to win more games the following season. And the Seattle Seahawks spent a ton of money on their defensive line. I love bringing in Julian Love in the secondary. Whether Jamal Adams plays linebacker or plays for another team, who knows? Bobby Wagner is kind of a shell of his former self, but you get all the good vibes and all that stuff going. So I like that one as well, but this is one, and George, you're going to hate me for it, but I mean, the alt unders to me on the 49ers, and you're just basically betting on the quarterbacks not being healthy or not being as good as they were last year, is very intriguing to me. And same with the Rams. I would take a Rams alt under as well, potentially.
Yeah. Just to mention real quick, Judah, the prices, I haven't been mentioning these because I've just been reading them off of a sheet, not off of the book here, but Niners under 11.5 is -130, over is +110. And then you mentioned the Rams. The over 7.5 is -135. The under +115. Judah, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think this is probably my favorite under and definitely my favorite alt under play so far, which is, again, we're talking about how teams signal, which is like, there's a massive question mark about Matthew Stafford's health, his career longevity. They've already started to kind of get rid of pieces, right? They traded Jalen Ramsey. This is a situation to me where if the Rams don't start out well, and again, like even before, Stafford got hurt, they weren't very good last year. And this is to me where like they start at 2-4 and they just start selling off, completely tanking, turning the page on this entire dynasty, turning the page on the Super Bowl run.
1 year dynasty.
The 1 year dynasty. I don't know. It just came out. Turning the page here and just tanking, and like the wheels can completely come off for the Rams. And they're pressing in a median projection of like, ooh, what if Stafford's good? Let's play on the assumption that something goes awry, or they're playing basically to where they were last year, and this could be a 4-win team, a 5-win team.
And just real quick, Kevin Demoff, the COO, putting out a statement like, stick with us and we're going to try and we're still going to try to contend. Yet, all due respect, the first player he mentioned is like, we're going to give young guys bigger roles and we expect a lot of them, was Cam Akers, who literally tried to fight his way off the team last year, like 6 months ago. And now he's the guy that you're supposed to like get excited about as like a future building block and pillar of the team. And he didn't even want to be on the team as recently as, November. So, yeah.
The LA Rams won 5 games last year. They didn't even have like a bunch of one score losses. They had 4 one score losses. So, I mean, this team wasn't just bad. I mean, they were awful. it's interesting. They had many wins as the Denver Broncos. And, the Denver Broncos just had a quarterback that crapped himself completely and entirely. So it's very interesting. That was the one that stuck out to me. And here's – so let's get inside Sean McVay's head here for a second. Sean McVay was contemplating retirement. I don't have any inside information here, but I am going to guess that
a Booth would have paid him, you know what I mean by Booth? I think Amazon would have paid him an insane amount of money. He and Al Michaels are close. They both live in LA, obviously, go out to dinner. You know, Al Michaels thinks the world of Sean McVay. I could see that being an obvious place for him. I'm guessing that he could have made, I don't know, $20 million, something like that, to go do that. He decides to come back to the Rams. They trade Jalen Ramsey. So do you think he came back to the Rams trying to win a Super Bowl this year? I don't think so. He's coming back to the Rams to try and win a Super Bowl at some point. It ain't this year. So how is it going to happen? I think there's an outside chance. They said, look, come back. Don't kill yourself this year. Take it easy. We're going to be bad this year. We're going to be really bad. But guess what? There's this guy that plays not too far away from us at USC, Caleb Williams. Wouldn't you like to coach him? And it wouldn't surprise me if they're going to say, hey, look, maybe we get the worst, have the worst record in the NFL. We pick one. But even if we don't, we'll sell the farm for it. We're going to trade as much away as we can. We'll get, you know, as many draft picks as we can. We're going to go all in on that. Sean McVay, you can have another chance at building a dynasty. That may be a little too far-fetched. Maybe McVay is like, no, I can run it back with Matt Stafford and win. But that to me is the narrative that I would kind of play here, borrow one of the ways that Judah thinks about things. And so I like that alt under for the Rams as well.
Here's one more bet against like Kyle Shanahan's
alt under, Brad, by the way.
Fair enough. I knew that wasn't getting over too well. So here's one more. Like what you're pitching is a narrative, but I think it's, you know, it's not a full narrative. Obviously, it's tied to a lot of rational thoughts. Here's one like specific data point that suggests that. Another thing I look at, when they cut all their players this offseason, they did not post June 1 cut them and spread the dead cap over 2023 and 2024. They took all the hits in just 2023 and ate all of it on, you know, on everything they did. Leonard Floyd and Bobby Wagner, they agreed, you know, like that's a signal. That's them saying, we're going to suck this year. We're not even going to let ourselves spend and you know, do something Ramsey and kind of, you know, play on words there unintentionally. But yeah, that's a signal. I mean, and like the Bucks did the same thing. Whereas, like, you know, other teams, you know, like that are trying to still be competitive are going to, you know, the Browns, like they you're going to use the post June 1 and try to keep contending. It's a big signal.
Yeah. I like the Seahawks as well, Brad. They were, I think it may have been one other team. Maybe it was the Colts or the Titans, but they had one of the closest kind of wins to Pythagorean win expectations last year. And they overachieved last year pretty significantly, right? But when you think about that overachievement and you compare it to some of the others out there, I mean, the Vikings are the big one where, you know, they won 13 games. As I mentioned, their win expectation right around 8. The Seahawks did not. And they have a lot of young players who really came into their own. One of the interesting things I think there is that, you know, DK wasn't healthy the whole year last year, and they still were really good. And it's another way of playing the two things that we just talked about, which is the Niners and the Rams stinking, because guess what? They play those teams 4 times. So I think that's, you know, they could potentially, like, it's not out of the realm of possibility to have all 3 of these teams other than the Seahawks be bottom, like 6 teams in the NFL. Like we're really not that far away, right? Like the Niners injury luck has been abysmal. They get a little bit more of that. The Rams decide to tank this year, and the Cardinals, they could try and win games and they're going to be absolutely god awful. So I think that's an interesting one. I like alts for the Seahawks as well. Okay. NFC East chugging right along here. The Philadelphia Eagles at 10.5, the Dallas Cowboys at 9.5, the New York Football Giants at 8.5, and the Washington Commanders at 7.5. Brad, what do you think about those?
Yeah, so I'm intrigued by, and I already have a little bit on the Cowboys division win, but I'm intrigued on a Cowboys alt over. Look, they missed Dak Prescott for 5 games last year, still won 12 games. They are getting younger and healthier, a lot of positions. Tyron Smith basically did not play all of last season as well, but you draft Tyler Smith, who looks very good already as a rookie. You know, trading for Brandon Cooks and Stephon Gilmore, you don't want to sell yourself too much on, you know, bring in 30-year-olds to be these magic fixes, but it's again a sign of aggression and trying to make a push. And I just, you know, the Eagles, they didn't lose everybody, you know, obviously keep Darius Slay, James Bradbury, but are losing a ton of talent on both sides or on the defense. And you know, maybe there's going to be some regression there anyway. Lose both coordinators. The Giants are another team that outperformed their Pythagorean win total as much as anyone. And I love my guy Jacoby Brissett, but the Commanders are still the Commanders. So yeah, if I had to make a play here, I'm not in love with anything, but I would look into an alt Cowboys over if I was going to make a play in the NFC East.
Yeah, I would just echo everything you just said. I've got nothing more. That's exactly how I'm approaching it.
You have some bias though, because taking Cowboys alt narratives has done you well this past year. So I'm just surprised that you didn't fade the Giants for what they did to you, what they cost you at the end of the year. For people wondering what I'm referencing, Judah almost hit like 270K same game parlays if it weren't for Daniel Jones kneeling down at the end of a playoff game. Judah wouldn't be talking to us from his home. He'd be talking to us from his yacht in the bay, the Cortez Bay in Cabo. I'm kind of with you guys here. You know, I think it's always a little scary to bet on the Dallas Cowboys, but as I said, I think they've done one of the best jobs this offseason. Now, TBD, are they going to go invest a first round pick? Are they going to trade up for Bijan Robinson? But what the interesting thing is there is you talked about, Judah, earlier, is that while that might be a poor football play long term, it could be a really good sign for this year. And, you know, you would expect, and we've seen this, running backs perform their best in their rookie contracts, right? They're going to come out and be the best versions of themselves earlier on in their career. So while it might be better for them to, say, invest at, you know, offensive tackle or, you know, other areas of maybe perceived less need that are more valuable in terms of winning this year, I think that would be something that doesn't scare me. So I'm with you guys on that. I think the Giants are interesting. Investing $40 million in Daniel Jones just has disaster written all over it. Like, I believe in Brian Daboll, but that has disaster written all over it. So I think other than the Dallas Cowboys, my initial thought is New York Giants under, as much as I like Brian Daboll. You know, you look at the New York Giants, and we don't talk about it because of the Minnesota Vikings. New York Giants had 8-1 score wins last year. So I think they're a team that, you know, they had 9 wins and a tie, right? Eight of those 9 wins were by 1 score. I'm going to fade that. The Giants under 8.5, which I think most people will look at and go, you know, but they're good. They're solid. Are they? Are they really that solid? Daniel Jones is not that good of a quarterback, and they're paying him $40 million now. It was one thing when you were paying Daniel Jones a rookie contract. It's a hell of a lot of a different story when you're paying. I mean, is Daniel Jones even a top 15 quarterback in the NFL?
Did you see the Dable quote today? Daniel
Jones a top half of the league quarterback.
You could argue either side, but that says enough in itself.
I think you could argue either side. I'll argue the one that is the other side of that. People have visions of sugar plums and Daniel Jones from that one playoff game against Minnesota dancing in their heads. I can't roll with that. So Giants under 8.5 is my favorite play there. Let's go to the AFC South. This division absolutely sucks. And if you want confirmation of that, there are four teams with win totals below 7 games. Two of them are in this division, and the other one is the Tennessee Titans at 7.5, the Indianapolis Colts at 6.5, the Houston Texans at 5.5, and the Jacksonville Jaguars at 10.5. Brad, we'll start with you.
This is the one that I referenced it earlier in relation to the Browns, but the Jaguars dropping at -130 to win the division and then having a 3-game lead on the Titans it makes no sense. And just shows how mispriced that was at the outset. I think it's -160 now, but you can probably argue there's still like some value there. You know, another one that I'm kind of avoiding, you know, in part because I'm already on the Jaguars to win the division. You know, I guess you could, if you wanted to get spicy with an alt on a team that you like, Houston, that you think is going to, I don't know, knock it out of the park with their two top 12 picks. Maybe you could sell me on that. But like, I'm just kind of avoiding this division.
Yeah. This is one of the rare cases where I actually prefer an under rather than an alt play, which is the Colts under 6.5. I just don't see how this team gets better, especially their probably taking a quarterback at four. If they're not taking a quarterback at four, then I really like under 6.5 because they have no one playing quarterback. But I don't think, I mean, whether it's Anthony Richardson or Will Levis, or I guess if CJ Stroud or Bryce Young fall, I don't think those guys in year one are necessarily going to produce very well. And again, like taking the expectation, this was one of the worst offenses in the league last year, probably, you know, the second or third worst. And they don't really have means to get better. This team's terrible. I don't really see how they're going to eke out 6-7 wins.
Even dead last in EPA per dropback.
Right. It's just like, even by my drive quality, they were the worst in the league, which is like, I feel like it's pricing in like, oh, the Texans are bad. The Titans are bad. But they're also looking at the schedule and saying, oh, the Colts are terrible. It's a win for us. I don't see, you know, 7 wins here.
I'm with you. And it's interesting, the Titans and the Colts. So I'm going to make kind of the same case for the Titans, which is at least the Colts have potentially an exciting rookie playing quarterback this year. I don't think you can say the same for the Titans. I am a believer in Mike Vrabel, and I think that's the reason this is 7.5, to be perfectly honest with you. But I could see the wheels coming off. And again, to what Brad was talking about in terms of team signaling things, if they're trading Derrick Henry, right? I mean, this is a signal. I don't think, maybe I'm wrong. I personally have no problem with, you know, putting my team's future on our guy, Chike Okonkwo, and letting him drive the bus. But I don't think that's going to be the path that they're going to take. And I'm not sure that's getting you over 7.5 wins. So I like the Titans here. I think the Titans are a sneaky team to be competing with the Rams for potentially a number one overall pick. And I think that would be a smart move. I think you should have faith in what Vrabel can do there. I think he's done a lot with a little. And you're not a team. Eric wrote about this for PFF over the course of his time here, where it's hard to go from it's hard to be a really good team. Either be like an awesome team, an elite team, or you want to suck. And I think the Titans are way, way closer to just being a sucky team, and they should embrace the suck there. All right, moving right along, the AFC East, the Buffalo Bills, 10.5, the New York Jets are at 9.5, the Miami Dolphins are at 9.5, and the New England Patriots are at 7.5, Brad. The opposite of the AFC South, where all of these teams are relatively good. What do you think here?
Yeah, so this is probably going to be a surprise, perhaps. I know Arjun liked Miami in this situation. I'm sure he'll touch on that in the future. I get all those reasons. I don't hate an alt over for the New England Patriots. And I know it sounds crazy, and I know they are probably going to be the worst team in this division. They are the worst team in this division on paper. I know. It's kind of – look, their roster is not great. I'm disputing that in any way, shape, or form. But I think you are – essentially this bet is – Rodgers comes in and is not as good as everyone expects. It's hard to create chemistry. It's hard to gel. He's still not a Jet at this point. When is that ever going to happen? Is it going to happen? With the Bills, I still just don't love their roster overall. I didn't love their offseason. They spent on a guard and a punt return kick or a kick returner slash like decent tertiary receiver in Deontay Hardy, but nothing crazy. They're picking 27th. They just, you know, you have Sean McDermott coming out saying Josh Allen needs to play a different style of football and not run around so much and all these things. That's all three. So that's kind of a negative narrative I have on all three of those teams. And then you just have good old Bill Belichick. And I think the biggest look, coaching is the players matter more than coaching. That is a fact. But going from Joe Judge and Matt Patricia to Bill O'Brien is maybe the biggest coaching hire of the entire offseason. I think that I don't even think it's hyperbolic to say that. So, you know, for me, yeah, I just kind of am going counter to all those, or I'm maybe pricing in injuries for the quarterbacks, or Rodgers not being, you know, what, you know, he's 40 years old, and you know the New York media gets in his head, or whatever the case may be. That was a joke, but yeah, so that's kind of it is me betting on a coach to a degree. But look, I mean, lowest season win total since Bill Belichick's been there. We've seen him do it time and time again. It doesn't make sense that the roster is not very good on paper. But they find a way to win, you know, 9 games, and maybe you get an alt 8.5, you know, here.
Very, very interesting take. I'm not sure how I feel about it. But to your point about coaching, I think the Dolphins over is intriguing just because I think Vic Fangio is a huge add.
Oh, yeah.
That makes an enormous difference, especially add in Jalen Ramsey. And look, you can argue how good Tua is in a vacuum. The reality is he produced at an incredible level, right? And then we know the main ingredients for that are his wide receivers and Mike McDaniel. They're not going anywhere. They upgraded, I think, in backup quarterback in case Tua gets hurt. I know I'm fine riding the Mike White train, but like I think the defense is going to get better, and we can like comfortably project that because I think Vic Fangio is one of those few coordinators who can really elevate his defense. They've also obviously improved talent wise, and again, it's a team that's going to be buying, right? They know their window is now, and the recipe is still there for a team that was producing at an elite clip with Tua, and I'm willing to buy that for many of the reasons you also mentioned about wanting to fade the Jets and the Bills. And I would still, I think the Patriots are going to be pretty bad, even with your good point about the.
No, they probably are.
Yeah.
You know anything that we don't about, like, is Lamar Jackson coming to New England or something? Because I look at this roster and I'm like, oh my God, like they're just not very good.
I thought their roster was awful last year. And it's kind of the same. So no, trust me, it's honestly me like being contrarian with myself and maybe being over, you know, too bullish on Bill Belichick, but. But yeah, that's where I landed.
Yeah. I don't really like anything here. I think I could get behind some Jets unders, you know, potentially, for all the reasons that you just mentioned. I don't know though. I think these are all pretty spot on. Honestly, I mean, the Patriots play, I guess if you're going to play them one way or the other, you know, play them on an alt line. But I might be tempted to go under versus over there. Okay, let's go to the NFC South. The New Orleans Saints lead the way here at 9.5. And then you go way down. Atlanta Falcons, Carolina Panthers, both at 7.5. And the lowly Tampa Bay Buccaneers are at 6.5. Brad?
Yeah, I think the one that jumps out to me here could be an alt under for the New Orleans Saints. You know, I know they made a bunch of moves this offseason, and people are going to be excited about them. If Cam Jordan or DeMario Davis, who are both going to be 34 years old next year, if Cam Jordan gets hurt and misses time, which has not happened his entire, you know, dozen years career, they have maybe the worst defensive line in the NFL. And then on the offensive side of the ball, Andres Pete is back on a reworked one-year deal. He misses a ton of time every year. They don't have another left guard really on the roster right now. Cesar Ruiz at right guard has been so-so, coming off a Lisfranc injury. So you have interior pressure affecting Derek Carr. Like, yes, I'm happy with the receivers, but let's say Michael Thomas gets hurt again, which is not a crazy thing to hypothesize. And then all of a sudden you're sitting here trying to get 10 wins out of, you know, Derek Carr, Chris Olave, and in theory, like a defense that, look, has been top 10 in EP per play 4 years in a row, but has 30-plus-year-old starters that have been phenomenal for the last, like, 3 or 4 years in a row, which you just imagine has to regress at some point, and there aren't young replacements available. Peyton Turner doesn't even play their 2020 first-round edge rusher. And they signed Kalen Saunders and Nathan Shepard, who played 350 snaps a year on their prior teams. Those are their two starting interior defensive linemen, you know, to deals that neither of them deserve, frankly. I mean, happy for them, like, you know, get your money. But yeah, so, you know, look, the Buccaneers are going to suck. The Falcons overs are intriguing to me a little bit. I'm kind of fading Carolina, but I think it's kind of priced correctly at 7.5. But yeah, the only one that jumps out to me is maybe just fading all this positivity and all this buzz in New Orleans, and seeing if, you know, they just kind of crap out and win 7 games.
Yeah. I mean, this division's, I just like hold my nose. I don't really want to bet anything. I guess I'll add a little bit to Brad, what you were saying, which is that, like, yes, Derek Carr is a better quarterback than Andy Dalton, but looking at the Saints last year, a 7-win team, Andy Dalton produced at basically the same rate that Derek Carr did. Like, the difference in EPA is like 0.02 for Andy Dalton and 0.04 for Derek Carr. It's not like a huge gap in the production. Add in the fact that, as you're mentioning, like, defensive regression is going to happen at some point. Like, Chris Olave is amazing, but it's kind of weak outside of that. Without Sean Payton still, I don't trust his coaching staff at all. I don't see it. I mean, division's so bad, you got to hold your nose, but I think I like the under on the Saints.
The only difference between Derek Carr and Andy Dalton is the color of their hair. They're like the same quarterback, the same freaking quarterback.
It's true. It's a good point. Yeah, no, it's true.
The same guy. They throw the ball accurately. They make terrible throws at the worst times. Jesus is their Lord and Savior. I don't know. They're so many parallels. The only speaking of Jesus being your Lord and Savior, I am a believer in Frank Reich. Of those teams down there, the Panthers, the Falcons, and the Bucks, I think two of those teams, the Falcons and the Bucks, could be in a situation where, like, they're looking for a new coaching staff. The Atlanta Falcons decided that Kyle Pitts was, like, not worthy of running routes at the rate of, you know, guys like Travis Kelce and other great tight ends. It's very strange. And the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are one of the most hideous looking offensive football teams known to man. So bad. I mean, just terrible. Frank Reich coming in and replacing Matt Rhule might be one of the biggest, wins for a football team. Not to mention that they're going to have a, you know, the number one overall pick this year. That what they're paying for that is a hefty price. But to Judah, your point, like, that's going to kick in over the course of time. For this season, there is a very potential path, possible path for the Panthers to have the best quarterback in the division. It's not outside the realm of possibility. So, yes, they gave DJ Moore. That stinks. It's not like they have a ton of weapons on this team. sorry to Adam Thielen. I don't think that's necessarily putting together a great list of weapons, but maybe they get a guy in the draft. I'm not saying that I love the over there, but if I had to make a play other than the Saints under, that would be the one that I would look at. Okay. One last division. That is the restoration of the roar. NFC North. Detroit Lions have the highest win total in this division. It is 9.5. The Minnesota Vikings, who won 13 games last year, are at 8.5. The Green Bay Packers and the Chicago Bears are at 7.5. Brad.
This is probably the tortured Bears fan in me, but Packers being plus money on the over 7.5 is interesting to me. Look, obviously Aaron Rodgers to Jordan Love is not going to be an improvement by any means. We are talking about an Aaron Rodgers that had a thumb injury, a rib injury, had no chemistry with his weapons that were very young last year. And then finally, Christian Watson was a dynamo the last, 6 weeks of the year. Other offensive line was banged up with a bunch of injuries, but now Elgton Jenkins extended, healthy, David Bakhtiari, his contract getting restructured is a massive signal to me that they have, for some reason, have confidence and faith in his health going forward. That was one of the more surprising moves of the entire offseason to me. I just think that, you're looking at this, it's going from Rodgers to Love. Look, they're making the decision. Yes, maybe there's some personal aspects of it and all that, but they clearly have seen enough. They were willing to sign Rodgers' contract. So you can't then turn around and say, they hate him as a person. They don't want him around here. They want to just get rid of him as soon as possible, yada, yada, yada. They would do it. I'm buying that maybe they've seen enough from Jordan Love in practice. They think he's going to be at least something. And then if we're buying massive regression from Minnesota, which I think we all are, obviously my Bears 7.5 is probably a fair line, maybe even a bit of a generous line. It's just, I don't know. It's probably just me being a tortured Bears fan, but the Packers going 9-8 next year. It makes a lot of sense to me.
Maybe Brad, this is what you were feeling, but didn't really want to say out loud. I love the Bears tail. I think when you look at the production of Justin Fields, you can clearly point to when everything changed, which is that Monday Night Football game against New England where they started running him. And the results from the Bears offense from that point forward were entirely different. They went from, a year and a half of Justin Fields and the worst offense in the league to well above average. Add in the fact that he was doing this throwing to Equanimeous St. Brown. They have three legitimate NFL wide receivers at this point. DJ Moore is good. Darnell Mooney's good. Chase Claypool, he's fine. I wouldn't go so far as to say, but he's a legit NFL receiver. I also kind of like where they're signaling, which is these are three guys who can all win deep. I think they're going to lean into Fields and his deep game, which is probably his best asset. And they added a whole bunch of good players. Are they at premier positions? No. Is that going to help on the margins? Absolutely. And we see quarterbacks getting better. This happens every year, whether it's Trevor Lawrence, whether it's Joe Burrow, teams that have young elite quarterback prospects who take the next leap in year two or year three. This happens all the time. I'd love to lean into Fields here. I think, again, as we've been saying all along about signaling, the Bears are clearly trying to get better this year. The division's awful. I'd lean into Justin Fields and the Bears.
I'm right there with you. I just think it makes too much sense. And 7.5, is a decent step up for them. So I'm not betting over 7.5. But the potential for them to be a, I wouldn't go so far as to say the Philadelphia Eagles of last year, but damn close, where they're going to have, I mean, we said we weren't going to talk about schedules. They're probably going to end up with a pretty freaking easy schedule. All of a sudden have a set of receivers that dramatically improve. Right. And that's what happened with the Eagles. So I like that quite a bit. I'll just say this, the Minnesota Vikings, as we have all talked about, they had 13 wins, 11 of which were one score wins. They had 0 1 score losses. Now they didn't have that many losses, so that's not ridiculous. I don't think betting over 8.5 is the play here. I do, as I've talked about, like betting them to win the division. I think to the, all the points that Judah just made, this division kind of stinks. Looking at the Lions, I will say this, and someone called this out in the Discord. If you're going to bet the Lions over 9.5 wins or the division, just go bet Dan Campbell to win coach of the year. Like he's, I think he's like 10-1 plus 950, I think on FanDuel right now. Just go do it, because if they win 10 games, they win the division, a division that's been won by the Green Bay Packers and or the Minnesota Vikings for however long, people are going to be running their ballot in to give Dan Campbell a coach of the year vote. So that is
on that note, really quickly, shout out Drew Dinsick, Will Capper, our buddy, and Jay Croucher from MC Sports Edge. They made the same argument for Matt Eberflus. So look, the Bears were 1-7 in one score games last year, but one of the least penalized teams in the NFL. They do a lot of little things correctly. And like there's easy to see a narrative where Chicago wins 8-9 games next year, exceeds their win total even by a little bit, but wins, you know, what, 5 or 6 more games in 2022. Fields does take that step. You see good off-ball linebacker play, and Eberflus obviously is, you know, the former linebacker, all those things. Like, I think that is a decent narrative. Or you know, if you want to bet Chicago in some way, but you maybe, you know, the over on the win total is -130, I think. Maybe you don't love the divisional odds. I don't hate betting Eberflus as coach of the year if that's kind of something, how you want to bet on that team next year.
Get behind that. All right. We managed to make it through 32 win totals in a little less than an hour, which is kind of impressive. It's kudos to both of you guys for coming prepared, ready to rock. Go follow both Judah at Throw the Damn Ball on Twitter and PFF_Brad on Twitter as well. So you can follow along as the off season goes on. Go join the Discord. Printed Press Discord. It is linked in the description. If you can't find that, you can always hit any of us up on Twitter and ask for it. Enjoy the tournament. Are there any bets that you guys are sweating at the current moment?
Apologies to the Discord, to the Printing Press for all of my advice on March Madness. I'll leave it at that.
It's okay. We win and we lose as a team. And
it's an NFL betting podcast for a reason.
Yeah,
you've been blessing us. You've been blessing us.
And we win and we lose as a team. When you,
that's right,
when you,
that's right.
About winners, I benefit. And look, my analysis on the NCAA tournament was very, very bad to start the tournament. But as I watched the games, as I got more information, I was able to adjust. Shout out to Austin Gale, by the way, whose San Diego State team is going to the final freaking four, which is absolutely incredible.
Bad day to be a Coors Light, as he said. Bad day to be a Coors Light.
All right, fellas, we will be back on Wednesday evening. We'll have Arjun to talk more win totals, get his take on it. Until then, peace out. Love you all.